take your fake lab-grown meat elsewhere. Producing or selling cultured meat to become a second-degree misdemeanor in Florida by the 1st of July.
Vegan activist group Radically Kind cook up a storm outside the Tate Modern.
Lidl's are investing $500 million into the pork industry.
And the same Italian government that ordered the culling of 10 pigs at an animal sanctuary in September have now banned puppy yoga on animal welfare grounds.
Anyway, that's enough of the falafel. I'm Julie.
I'm Anthony.
And I'm Kate, and this is episode 63 of Vegan Week. Welcome everybody, it's great to have you here.
Yes, welcome everyone to Vegan Week, where we give a roundup of the latest news relating to veganism and animal rights. We bring you the good news and the not so good news, but where there's not so good news, we try where we can to give you ways where you can take some action.
Absolutely. And if you've not come across our stuff before, do check out your podcast feed, because we also have the Vegan Talk Show, where we get deep and philosophical about vegan and animal rights topics, as well as our Going Vegan series that we did back in January. Now, before we go any further, we do need to thank our sponsors, Fire and Flow Coffee. They are a 100% vegan specialty coffee retailer. They also do brilliant loose leaf tea. You can find their stuff on fireandflowcoffee.co.uk. And all listeners to this show get 10% off at the checkout if you just enter the code FALAFEL10. So that's the word falafel with a number one and a number zero after it.
Right, that's enough of the falafel. Let's hear what's been going on in this week's news.
You just said falafel. That's the first time I've ever heard you say it like that, Kate. What's happened?
I don't know. Something's gone wrong with my brain. So we're going to start with 10 stories or so, pretty briefly, and then we're going to each pick one and go into those in a little bit more depth before we then get on with our main story of the week.
So first up, quite appropriate because Kate's dog has just tried to muscle in on the show a little bit. I think they maybe had a bit of a comment about this story that we've got here about puppy yoga. Maybe just something to say on that. Italy's Ministry of Health bans puppy yoga classes, saying only adult dogs should take part in order to protect the health of animals as well as the safety of attendees. Puppy yoga apparently improves well-being and is therefore considered as a kind of animal-assisted therapy, which by law can only be carried out by fully grown animals. Puppy yoga involves puppies roaming freely around a yoga class and sometimes being incorporated into yoga poses or a yoga class followed by playtime with the puppies. The ministry apparently asked regional authorities to carry out checks to ensure that puppy yoga classes don't take place. So I did a tiny bit of reading into this. And that one of the objections was that the presence of puppies meant that participants may be overtaken by a wave of emotion and tempted into adopting the animals, which incidentally are borrowed from breeders. I just thought, well, the easy answer to that is to invite people who have a dog to bring their own. But anyway, there you go. That's the puppy yoga story.
More on that one later, don't you worry.
Just to tell you, just in case you wondered, yeah, my dog hates puppies. So she gets very, very cross with them. So
that explains it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be taking her. So, yeah, I've got a rather horrible story. So in the Daily Mirror, sickening bear boxing matches taking place in Russia, and there are images of black bears, wild black bears, dressed in human clothes, and they've sparked uproar and calls for an end to their use in circuses in Russia. They show the black bears who've been torn from their natural habitats. They're dressed in shorts and wearing boxing gloves with ropes tied around their waists, and they're being forced to wrestle with each other in the middle of a circus ring. rather a grim story.
Absolutely. It's just when you thought Russia's PR couldn't get any worse. Really disgusting stuff. This one from the Animal Reader. Bird flu has now been identified in a walrus for the first time. Been raging through all manner of different animals, not just birds. And yes, recently walrus is added to that list. So a new type of animal affected by this contagious disease. The discovery was made after a walrus was found dead on the Svalbard archipelago in Norway. And the animal was tested and it was indeed positive for the virus. And the concern, just in case anyone's not aware, is that H5N1, which is the sort of scientific classification of bird flu, or this strain of bird flu at least, the concern is that this could change into a form that spreads more easily between people. Obviously, it's horrific that it's affecting animals in this way, but it being spread more easily between people could potentially cause a pandemic amongst human populations too.
It's already a pandemic through the birds and some of the other wildlife, isn't it?
So yeah.
Over on the farming scene, you know, when there's some kind of raffle on or some kind of event and people don't want to admit that it's not been very popular and the uptake's not been very high. So they say, oh, we've extended the deadline. Aren't you lucky? Brilliant. Because there's been such a great response. Good for you. You know, you've even more chances to join in. Well, something similar has happened with this consultation on targeted badger culling in areas of England. Badger culling happens because people feel that they're a reservoir for infection, for TB that affects cattle. It's only one theory, it's never been actually proved, whatever. So the government has, and DEFRA have, identified these parts of the country deemed high risk areas and edge areas, and they're wanting to continue to cull there. They have put out a consultation which was due to close on the 22nd of April, but lo and behold, obviously they did not get the answers they were seeking and they've extended it to the 13th of May. That's really all this news is about. And in a way, it's kind of good news because it makes me think that perhaps there weren't many respondents to their inquiry, you know, to their consultation. They've already spent £58.8 million on culling badgers in England with no apparent quantifiable benefits. There are other measures that they can put in place, such as vaccinations and basic hygiene, cleaning troughs, etc. I've not read anything about initiatives that have been too focused on these things, but the culling seems to be quite a popular one. So yes, the article is there for people to, you know, read up on in the show notes. But it's an interesting topic that you can do quite a lot of reading around because there's quite a lot being written about the topic as well.
I don't want to put too many hopes on the upcoming UK general election, but it does seem to be another one of those that actually, without a Tory government, other parties seem to be a lot more receptive to non-culling of badger ways of controlling bovine TB.
Could just end dairy, of course. Yeah. But, you know.
Don't be ridiculous.
Oh, well. My next story is about Mayor Eric Adams in New York, who has seen the introduction of plant-based meals into hospitals, plant-based by default. And that's been working so well that they are now beginning to introduce it into the prison system. So he is part of an initiative to invest 100,000 to train food service workers in the city's prison system to cook healthy plant-based meals. The New York City Department of Correction and the Administration for Children's Services will partner with non-profit Hot Bread Kitchen to develop the training program. It will help staff at several correctional facilities to learn plant-based centered culinary skills. And when you think about people such as Joey Carbstrong, who's been through the US correctional facilities, who I think found it very hard to access vegan meals, just, you know, the fact that people may for the first time in their lives be going to be given healthy, tasty meals, you know, I think that's just a great thing altogether. So it shows care for the people that are stuck within that system.
I'm not gonna make this a big argument that goes on for a long time, but I find it really hard to say anything positive about things that happen in prisons, because it's not necessarily something I believe in. But if as a society that is how we're gonna put people who come up against problems, then them eating plant-based, just like anyone eating plant-based, I suppose is better than the alternative.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's a terrible system, but it's one that we're stuck with at the moment until we get some enlightened leaders, you know.
This one from Plant-Based News. The Middle East Vegan Society is launching its new Vegan Islam initiative. It aims to educate the public on veganism, the religion of Islam, and their complementary values. So after a year of development, the Vegan Islam initiative rebuffs common misconceptions about being a vegan Muslim and highlights the importance of animal rights. The Middle East Vegan Society notes that one notable commonality between Islam and veganism is a shared emphasis on love and compassion towards animals, and its new guide covers common Islamic concepts such as harm avoidance and preserving nature. Well, who knew? I must say I had no idea about any of that. So I did read the article. I found it interesting. I didn't have any knowledge of the Middle East Vegan Society at all.
Good for them. Good for them. So moving on now, this is definitely our viral story of the week. It kept popping up on my news feed in various guises. And this is the news that a plant-based blue cheese that was apparently set to win a Good Food Award has been disqualified at the last minute after a complaint about one of its ingredients, the plot thickens, or the plot curdles, as certain news outlets reported. So this was primarily reported by the Washington Post. The blue cheese is made by Climax Food, the first vegan cheese to be selected as a finalist in the 5 years since plant-based products have been allowed to compete against dairy cheese in this award. Apparently, a confidential letter sent to the company in January by the Good Food Foundation, who oversee the awards, said that the blue cheese would be crowned the winner. On a separate note, these food awards are so often corrupt and rigged, and you just pay for your awards. That's a whole separate show that we could cover that on. But they were told it was going to win. But then 1 week before the ceremony, the Good Food Foundation dropped Climax from the list of finalists. The reason they gave is that someone raised concerns that the cheese contained cocoa butter, which, despite the fact it's used in food and cosmetics quite widely, it might not meet the generally recognized as safe, or GRAS, designation by the US FDA. It was also noted that the cheese didn't meet the award's requirement of being retail ready, as it was approved for use in food service. Finally, on this one, the CEO of Climax Foods, Oliver Zahn, claims that the dairy industry is behind this desperate effort to keep plant-based cheese from consumers. Who knew? Goodness me. If you want to follow that one for more conspiracy theories, do click the link in our show notes.
I just had to Google that, though, because I did not know there was a food company called Climax Foods. And when I Googled that, I really didn't know what my search engine was going to come up with. But they do exist. And just shout out to them for calling their company that. I love them already. I've got a rough idea what they make.
Yeah.
but yeah, I love them.
I've got a few guesses of some of what their products might look like, but that's them.
Oh my gosh.
Well, sounds like it's worth trying if we ever can get our hands on it. So anyway, so my story is about a new study on paleo diets. The story appeared in The Independent, and it's been published by the Nature Ecology and Evolution Journal, and it suggests that the general idea of meat being the primary source of protein during this time isn't valid. I think we have had studies kind of saying this before, but the findings suggest that some Stone Age people ate a mostly vegan diet. They used something called stable isotope analysis, and it was focusing on the nitrogen and zinc isotopes in teeth enamel and collagen to look at the meat consumption associated with, now I don't know if I can even pronounce this, Iberomaurusians, is that right, do you think? as well as carbon isotopes to discover whether meat or fish was the primary source of protein, which of course we all know, all Stone Age men were hunters and brought home the mammoths, etc. So our analysis showed that these hunter-gatherer groups included an important amount of plant matter, wild plants, to their diet, which changed our understanding of the diet of pre-agricultural populations. I wonder if all the paleo people out there will be going to change their diets anytime soon. That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Depends how authentic they're feeling, perhaps. I don't know how important it is to somebody following that diet that they're representing an authentic paleolithic person, or whether it's just the latest fad or food that seems to work for them. Anyway, quick one here, bit of business news to include for balance, because we've included a few stories recently bigging up Lidl and their attempts to boost plant-based products and their vegan range and things like that, which is all wonderful. But this week they have announced a £500 million investment package into the British pork sector. As part of the move, they have moved pork producers to an open book model, the Lidl Pork Standard, that includes cost of production with guaranteed farmer margins. It's also launched a pork producer group, which will see it invest in farm initiatives to, quote, decrease emissions and fund research into welfare enhancements. Obviously not the news we were hoping to hear, but important to report because, you know what, we get very excited in the vegan movement when we see all these positive headlines for companies like Lidl, but make no mistake, they are still investing in animal ag big time. So we're not going to let them get away with it without reporting it. That's for sure.
I'll write to them and
do it.
I honestly will.
Yeah,
I will write to them.
Yeah, well, it's, yeah. I mean, what
everyone should write to them.
What's the point investing in? Well, I know it's spread betting, isn't it? But I was going to say, what's the point investing in both? Like, pick a side. Come on, Lidl.
Yeah, I'm going to boycott them and write to them.
Okay, so my next story is, I feel like I'm from the Stone Age now. I'm not really into rap, but someone called Rapper C5, who I'm sure everybody knows except me. Okay, C5 has collaborated with Peter to release a music video with a pro-vegan message. His video covers all the reasons to ditch animal products, which is called Go Vegan, and I'm not going to do a little rendition for you either and ruin your day. Among them, he says, are saving animals from torment and death to bolster human health and protecting the planet for future generations. I mean, brilliant. Good on him. So, you know, for making a stand for his ethics and his beliefs and making a stand for the animals, great. And I hope he influences a lot of his fans.
And Kate, don't worry. I actually had to put rapper C5 in to get him Googled properly. When I just did C5, I got Sinclair C5. I don't know whether my search engine just doesn't think that I'm interested. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, well, it's Julie. She's quite old. She'll be harking back to the days of the Sinclair C5. I don't know. But yeah, I needed to stipulate rapper for my search engine.
Is he named after the Sinclair C5, do you think?
He might. He looks quite young.
I've just had to Google Sinclair C5. For any listeners who are not sure, it is a small one-person battery electric recumbent tricycle.
Another story from me now regarding one of my favourite charities, actually, Animal Aid, very close to my heart. On Saturday there was hundreds of animal rights activists joining together in Liverpool to march peacefully through the city to mark World Day for Animals in Laboratories. Activists from Nottingham, Yorkshire, Surrey, Essex and many other parts of the country joined together to remember animals and observe a 2-minute silence on this important day. Animal Aid's head of campaigns spoke at the beginning of the march, as did other activists throughout the march, focusing on the importance of being active, on grassroots activism and our attitudes to animals and their suffering. The human activists were joined on the march by a lot of their dogs And this was quite a good reminder of the thousands of dogs who are used and killed in laboratories in the UK every year. Animal Aid are saying, off the back of this demonstration as well, they're encouraging us to contact our own MP about our opposition to animal experiments. And Animal Aid have two asks: that existing funding's diverted from animal experiments to the development of ones that don't use animals, and also for a timetabled roadmap to urgently end all animal experiments. And if you go on their website, the Animal Aid website, we can put that in the show notes, or it's in the link to the article, you can join in the campaign.
Absolutely. And from an action that has happened to one that is coming up at the end of this month from the Solicitor's Journal, not a news source we've used before, we can report that Birmingham City University is gearing up to host the fourth annual UK Animal Law Conference, and it's set to take place on May the 29th and 30th. The event's part of the ongoing journey towards securing legal rights and protections for animal in the UK and beyond. Senior lecturer in law at BCU, Dr. Ian Ofor, who is a leading expert in animal law, says that now is the time to create a better legal future for animals that gives them the protection they so desperately need. And the event will have a focus on fostering collaboration amongst lawyers, academics, NGOs and students. And the conference aims to facilitate discussions on key issues in animal law, including policy, research and education. And again, link in the show notes for that one.
Very interesting. And so my next story is, well, appeared in The Independent, and it's about the TV programme I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Peter protesters wearing frog masks held up a banner reading, ITV, it's cruelty to animals. Get it out of I'm a Celeb. The group said activists told board members and shareholders using frogs, insects, ostriches, crocodiles, rats and other animals in tacky stunts is cruelty, not entertainment. ITV said, as a production, we comply with all regional and national laws concerning the use of insects, animals and reptiles. Welfare and safety is always the primary priority on any of our programmes, and we inform the RSPCA New South Wales of all of our activities on the show, and they have an open invitation to attend the site at any time. We have rigorous protocols in place to ensure that animals are handled safely at all times, before, during and after any filming has taken place in compliance with all regional and national laws. But as we know, there are really no laws to protect animals particularly. So shame on them is all I can say.
It's a bit like when you just need someone to keep talking and you hear the absurdity of their argument. That quote from ITV says quite a lot actually, doesn't it really?
It does. Yes.
Over to London now for a little story about the vegan activist group Radically Kind. They have treated passers-by outside the Tate Modern to a kind of street performance, for want of a better word, where they cooked blood-soaked human baby dolls before cutting them up and displaying them on food dishes among vegetables. Claudia, the organiser and founder of the group Radically Kind, said the demonstration was designed to be shocking and to provoke conversation. Drawing a comparison with human babies helps us to realise that what we do to animals and their babies is wrong, she said. Another protester, Ross, said, every year, tens of billions of young animals are slaughtered for food, typically mere weeks or months after they're born. So, yeah, more on that story later. We don't have time to go into each news story in a lot of detail, but there is a link to the articles in the show notes. So we'll just pick a story each and have a little bit of a chat about it. So first of all, Ant, what story would you like to talk about a wee bit more?
I'd like to talk about Italian puppy yoga, please, Julie. I can't believe I'm saying that, but I thought there were so many interesting talking points on that one. First up, I mean, it took me right back to Thursday's Vegan Talk episode where Carlos and myself and Luke were talking about capturing people's love for their companion animals or cute animals and trying to harness that to help vegan activism. Like it clearly shows you, we've got things like puppy yoga going on, and actually it's been stopped in Italy because of animal welfare concerns. That surely demonstrates that. Researching more into it though, I mean, it's absolutely absurd. Part of it might be lost in translation. There's a website called puppiesyogaroma.com, which I'll put a link in the show notes for, and that is one example of it. It's a complete mess in terms of you trying to work out, like, what is the point of this? What are they trying to do? What sort of ethical stance are they taking on it? It really doesn't seem like they actually know what they want it to be or what they're trying to make it, other than people like yoga, people like cute puppies, let's combine the two and we might be able to make a buck or two more than we currently are. That's all I can put it down to. As I said in my intro to the show, this is the same Italian government that about 9 months ago chose to authorize the killing of 10 pigs at an animal sanctuary. And they're now saying that they want authorities to check that not only are they saying puppy yoga shouldn't be happening, but they're saying we're going to send people round to check that you're not doing it, which is a really interesting dichotomy between those two stories. One obviously very tragic and this one almost farcical. But my feeling generally, I don't know about the two of you, but I am glad that this is being highlighted as a practice that shouldn't be happening. Not quite sure on the logic of saying, oh, it's, you know, it's bad because it's puppies, but if it was fully grown adult dogs, then that would be okay. I mean, I know people who've done dog yoga, and I don't know. I still am not sure to what extent a dog is able to show its consent there. And you know, you're putting a dog in a yoga pose. I know there is a yoga pose called a downward dog, but I still don't really think that's kind of behavior that they would naturally be wanting to do. But yeah, what do the two of you think about this one?
Well, I'm, as you know, probably forced into the situation where I need to label myself as an abolitionist vegan. I just think of myself as being a vegan, but because the blooming waters are so muddy these days, I'm against all use and abuse and exploitation of animals, however benign looking. So walking with alpacas, cat cafes, even little Shetland ponies getting taken round care homes for older people, all of that is off limits to me, every single part of it. So this is no different. I don't care how old the dogs are. The principle for me is the same. They're not here for our therapy, use, entertainment, enhancement of our well-being or whatever. If we can get a sense of well-being from the privilege of being in an animal's company, that's a different matter, as long as it's done on an equal basis. But this isn't that. So it's off limits to me.
The faux care that is being purported by these companies who are doing it, there's a bit on their website where this one company anyway, where it's saying, oh, that this is actually really good for the puppies because it's getting them used to being away from their mothers for a bit. And it's good for the mothers because, you know, they're being bothered by the puppies quite a lot and stuff. It's like, what are you talking about? That's not why you're doing this at all. It's like you say, Julie, it's just for selfish human means. It's all it is.
I agree. I'm an abolitionist vegan as well. You know, I don't think we should be having dogs or cats, or, and this is encouraging people to get a puppy even. You know, they even say that it might encourage people to get a puppy when they haven't really thought about it deeply enough. It might just anything like that. I do not like. In fact, I get very cross when I hear people saying, I bought a puppy. You know, I just think, why are you buying a puppy when there are so many dogs that need rehoming? You know, I find it all very weird.
Yes. I also feel sorry for anybody working for regional authorities in Italy, where they are now being asked to carry out checks to ensure puppy yoga classes don't take place. I don't think that's a career anyone is seeking out for. Oh, what did you do at work today? Oh, I had to make sure some puppy yoga wasn't going on.
It's better than being on the bin round, I'm sure.
Perhaps, or making sure that the welfare of crickets on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here is up to standard. Anyway, enough of that story. Kate, what's your pick of the news this week?
I was torn between a few things, but I just thought I would plump for the Little Pork story. I can't help wondering if some of this publicity and stuff is partly because of the films that have been coming out lately. You know, the industry must have noticed Pignorant and probably watched it. And they must have noticed The End of Medicine and probably watched it. And now we've got the I Could Never Go Vegan movie as well. Whether either of you have seen that, that's also got quite a bit about pigs in there. And so slaughterhouse footage and going into a factory farm. This latest investment of 500 million, I can't believe it's really 500 million pounds, follows an injection of over 14 million into the industry last year. Oh no, sorry, 2022. When the market price of pork, I hate calling it pork, but there we are, fell far below the cost of production. And Lidl increased the price paid to farmers to ensure it was above the market price on three separate occasions. They're going to cover all the cost of the production of these, the growth of these pigs. They're going to guarantee buying a minimum number of these pigs, and there's going to be a fixed margin for farmers pay to them, i.e. some sort of profit for a change. And they say they're investing in assessing the carbon footprint of all pig farms and subsequently putting plans in place to reduce the emissions of greenhouse gases. And I think, well, good luck with that one as well. But they're also looking at investing 250,000 in at-risk catchments to support river health and water quality, which is also another thing that was highlighted in some of these films. And they're going to be looking at trying to locate deforestation-free soy for the pig feed. It's all terrible greenwashing. And apparently Lidl have six levels of welfare for their pigs. Their deluxe sausages are labelled level three out of six levels.
Is one of the levels still alive?
Yeah, no, there is one dead. Yes, no, there isn't. No, still alive. Yeah, that's probably, yeah, oh dear.
When you hear these measures and they're saying, oh, we're thinking of, you know, using 3D cameras to monitor their, you know, their welfare and things like that. It's like, what? I tell you what, try not killing them age 6 months, you know, try and let them live longer than half a year. See what that does to their welfare.
We'll only let them live longer if they've got some kind of life to live. If you are going to just have them on bare concrete and crammed behind iron bars and all the rest of it, actually just do away with them and make it quick, because that is no life. But don't spend all that money on tech. Actually put some bedding down for them and give them a bit of room. But yeah, I think just, yeah.
Oh, it is horrible. I just wanted to let you No, if you don't already, Julie, you probably already know that there's six different labels. But like I said, deluxe sausages. So those poor little pigs are in level three out of level six. And level three is British outdoor bred. And that is pigs are born in fields with shelters. After 4 weeks, they move to comfortable straw barns with natural enrichment. You know, so, I mean, that's their deluxe.
They're making it sound like they're choosing to. Like, after 4 weeks, they're like, I tell you what, guys, should we move inside now to these nice straw? Like, it's not like they're autonomous beings, is it? Like, they're being picked up and they're being hoiked and given no choice in the matter. It's disgusting language. Anyway, Julie, what is your pick of the news this week? What story do you want to look at in a bit more detail?
I want to give a bit of focus and a big up to this group of vegan activists who are calling themselves Radically Kind. They are quite new. They started up in September of last year. They are London-based. They've done a couple of things already. Both big demonstrations were outside the Tate Modern. I don't know if you noticed the first one. I do remember this. And it was last year when they had five quite young women, topless, getting kind of like a bit like the dairy industry kind of thing. You know, they had mocked up milking machines on their boobs. And a woman in a white coat was talking to the audience saying, you know, this is humane human milk and it's a great new product. And these girls, you know, they've got a great life and we give them this, that and the other. And it was very much directly relating to the dairy industry. It was visually quite shocking. They had kind of blood on them. They had fake poo on their bottoms like dairy cows do and all the rest of it. So they've done stuff like this before. So they're a little bit PETA-esque in their approach. What I like about them in general, before I talk about their latest antics, what I like about them, I like the messages, the things they have written on their placards really resonate with me. They are properly advocating for animals and for old-fashioned veganism, animal rights veganism. They are not selling a lifestyle or talking about the environment. Nothing wrong with doing these things, but they're not, to my mind, well, not just not my mind, it's not it's Donald Watson's mind and the people who invented veganism, really, but they really are on message when it's about the animals, and they're very articulate. And that is a breath of fresh air to me. I really appreciate that about them. They are visually very interesting. They will catch people's attention, definitely, with the things they do. So they are part of, I think, a sort of suite of things that we need. We couldn't rely on their approach solely. I'm sure we couldn't, but we kind of need it because they are very eye-catching. They definitely have a place in the whole kind of spectrum of approaches that need to be used. So I like them for that. But the main thing that I really like is that they came to my attention this week at a really good time, because I had just had a communication from the Vegan Society that made me think, I don't think I want to contribute to this organization anymore. They were really changing the conversation of veganism and putting the animals last place behind human health and the environment. And I object to that. I think that because veganism and the vegan movement, it's a word that is, it's the animals, it's about animal rights, it's an objection to the worst possible abuses committed against the most vulnerable members of our world. And when we use the word veganism and take that away from the animals and start to use that word in connection with humans and their athletic performance, or humans and the firmness of their erections, or, you know, a la that film, I Could Never Go Vegan. When we start to steal that word and make it about humans, we are committing that anthropocentric sin that everybody else is already committing. You know what I mean? The animals need us on their side. We don't side with the human interested humans, or we're just like them. You know what I mean? And well, not just like them, but we're going that way. I don't want veganism to be hijacked. The other stuff is plant-based. There's nothing wrong with it, but call it what it is. But this lot are definitely veganism, as I understand it to be. And I love them for that. So this particular demonstration, you know, some people were purportedly shocked by it. I'm glad folk are meant to be shocked. And they didn't have anything actually gory. It was obvious these were dolls. It wasn't, I mean, a doll, even with tomato sauce on it, is much less gory than an actual piece of meat is. Definitely. I mean, I think there would be more cause for complaint if they had bits of dead animals that they were, you know, doing stuff with. So it was dolls and it was tomato sauce and it was very visual, but the wee signs were spot on. They were great. Doug Moore was there, as you can imagine. He's everywhere right now, getting tomato sauce squirted on his mouth. It was, you know, it was quite a spectacle. But I just, more power to them, I think. I don't think that seeing that will turn people vegan, definitely not. But I think seeing that will catch people's attention and start to get them thinking. And I think it will be a step along the way. So
the word that's coming in my head repeatedly with this story is provocative. I think the word shocking often has negative synonyms, negative associations. And I think probably that word has been used in the press release, that the media reporting of this just to get a few more clicks or what have you. But their purpose is clearly to be provocative, to provoke our thoughts, to raise our awareness, to make us question things. And doing it outside the Tate Modern is a really carefully thought out, I would imagine, choice. And it's really spot on, because I was in the Tate Modern a few weeks ago. Whenever I'm in London, I've been going there because it's a really thought-provoking place. And it's the kind of place where you are, where you question things, and people who've, you know, are putting forward causes and ideas that you've not necessarily considered before, it brings them into your sphere and you go, oh, do you know what? And like you say, Julie, it's not necessarily going to be the thing that completely turns your worldview upside down, but it's going to get the cogs going, isn't it? And like you say, more power to them. And just quickly on the point that you were saying about organizations like the Vegan Society putting the animals last, like, if we as vegans are not advocating for animals, like, who exactly is going to be doing that? We can't be ashamed of doing it. Yes, of course, point out the other benefits too, but for goodness sake, like, if
we don't put the animals in last place,
no. Well, who else is going to do it? You know,
yeah. But, absolutely.
Yeah.
And can I just say as well, on the point of Radically Kind, I mean, they've got a website and they've got a Facebook page, but they don't just go about being very beautiful people in extremely scanty clothing, doing slightly sexy things with foodstuffs. They're on Facebook doing a sanctuary visit and, you know, photographs of that. It's the first of many, apparently. And doing a huge number of tree planting things. You know, they're not just doing that kind of stuff. But yeah, I just think, shout out to them, definitely.
I really love them as well. I just love, I mean, it's, to me, that is art at its best, performance art. Really is. It just gets straight to people, doesn't it?
There's a lovely video on YouTube of someone who is obviously some quite well-known person, Tash, somebody who got involved with that, but I didn't recognise her because I'm fuddy-duddy and I don't have a TV.
Tash Peterson, is it?
Yes, I think so. And so there's a lovely video on the internet of her involvement in getting her kit off and then on to be a milked human being, and, you know, a nice interview and things afterwards. It's very illuminating. I think it would have been interesting. I suppose they couldn't involve an older woman in that because actually older cows are not part of, dairy cows don't get to grow old. They're always young. They usually are milked until they collapse and become fallen stock. They can't even send them to slaughterhouses because animals to go to a slaughterhouse need to walk in, and dairy cows can't walk usually by the time they're finished squishing milk out of them.
Indeed. No, all power to them. Very, very provocative stuff. Let's move on now to our final and our main story of the week. We got this from Vegconomist, but it has been reported widely in American news outlets, particularly the South, for reasons that will become clear. Kate's going to give us a background to this story, and then we'll go into it in a bit more detail. Over to you, Kate.
Yes, so Florida's governor, Ron DeSantis, he's getting himself all in a fluster. He's signed a law prohibiting the sale and production of lab-grown meat within the state. Florida now is the first US state to enact such a ban, but I don't suppose it will be the last, unfortunately. Legislation known as Senate Bill 1084 will be enforceable as a second-degree misdemeanor starting July the 1st. Governor DeSantis is quoted as saying, "Take your fab lab-grown meat elsewhere. We're not doing that in the state of Florida." sorry, my rubbish accent. Global elites want to control our behaviour and push a diet of petri dish, meat and bugs on Americans. I want to keep lab-grown meat out of Florida and prioritise our farmers and ranchers. So the aim is to protect local farmers from the competition posed by emerging food technologies. Well, good luck with that. Florida Senate voted 86-27 in March before moving to receive the governor's final endorsement. Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services Commissioner Wilton Simpson described lab-grown meat as a disgraceful attempt to undermine our proud traditions and prosperity and is in direct opposition to authentic agriculture. The US currently has 43 companies involved in developing cultivated meats.
Thanks, Kate. Julie, you worried?
No.
You never are.
No, I'm not worried. And I don't think anybody should be about this at all. The only people who appear to be worried are these people who are trying to get this stuff banned because they obviously see it as a threat. And I think that's a good thing that they see this as a threat. If they were fine about it, you know what I mean? Almost that would be a worry, but they're not. They're scared. And I like that. So I'm not worried at all. And it's coming to the UK and it's coming very soon. And there are lots of things happening to make it come along to us as quickly as possible and to even speed up the process. So it's not affecting our availability of this product in any way. The only thing I found impressive about this story was how quickly their legislative process kicked in. You know, when we want to get things changed over here, even in Scotland with our own little parliament here, it seems to take an awful long time to get quite a small change to any existing law. But they seem to have managed to enact some legislation very quickly. But no, I'm not at all worried. It's a shame, though, that even if there are some really sort of redneck, diehard meat eaters in that part of the world, that they don't just embrace the kind of diversity that people being able to have a choice would bring.
Well, I mean, all of it points to the acute amount of fear that there is there, the speed in which it's gone through, like you say, the fact that they're banning it before it's not even available yet. Like they're banning something that doesn't exist. It's ridiculous. And they are overtly saying it's because of fear. Like they're overtly saying, this is a threat. This is something we need to nip in the bud. And your brilliant accent, Kate, is we've got listeners in the States. I'm not sure about Florida specifically, but perhaps they can send us in a voice note and do their best imitation of Ron DeSantis. But like, yeah, like he's literally saying, we don't want this here. Like we're terrified about it. You're a big fan and evangelist of lab grown meat, Kate. I wonder whether you feel more threatened by this.
Sorry, I just must send out a huge apology then for my horrendous accent of the American.
I'm sure it was spot on.
I'm so sorry. Anyway, yeah, lab-grown meat, fermented meats, all those technologies, because this is why they're frightened. They know that it's just got a huge potential to just kill ranching and all animal agriculture stone dead in the water. But they have still left. I think they're still allowed to research there, aren't they? There's like 46 companies, and I think they're still allowed to research because that there's still some hope for them there. But I can just see so many other countries, you know, they'll be, including our own, rubbing their hands in glee because who is it? Oh, the Good Food Institute Europe suggests that the country needs to invest $390 million in alternative proteins between 2025 and 2013 to gain a foothold in the global race to create alternative animal products. America, I'm sure, should want to be part of that race. It's happening, whether they put their heads in the sand or not. So Germany, research from Germany, they're not so squeamish about it there, are they? I think once it's finally in place, consumers will embrace it if it's cheaper and tastes like the same and all the rest of it. And there is no way of stopping it, I don't think. I think it's going to happen.
It's very interesting from a psychological point of view. I looked at this as reported in scientificamerican.com, and they quoted a 2020 study carried out by a psychology researcher called Matty Wilkes from the University of Edinburgh, just down the road from Julie, saying that basically a lot of people's response to cultured meat is very emotive, and it's not at all rational. And so you see high reportings of responses such as disgust and fear initially. And that's like quite a visceral reaction. And actually that's the biggest thing it needs to overcome. But I think that's just going to be something that people get used to over time, isn't it? And actually the economic drivers in other states in the US are going to see that momentum is still carried through. I mean, we should stress this is just in Florida. There's thoughts that other southern states might have put a similar ban in place, but I don't think there's any chance of this being a nationwide ban across the US because the economic potential for it is just too great, unfortunately, in a capitalist world like money talks. And I think that's going to overcome those emotive fear responses that a lot of people are showing to it at the minute.
The fear responses are good, though. They're useful for a couple of reasons. One is that it can enable that conversation to say to people, this isn't GM. We're not talking about genetic modification, because that's what's tangling some people up, I think. But also, when we are countering the things that people are saying they're afraid of, for everything they're afraid of about cultured meat, there is definitely a worse example in the meat that they are already consuming if they're consuming meat. So, you know, the antibiotic resistance is just one example of that, but it will open up that whole conversation, you know, where people might have been just eating meat and not even thinking about any of the dangers about what they're doing. Because if we're not winning the argument on animal rights with some people because we're never going to get there, we are going to have to, you know, make the case some other way, as I say, as long as we don't call it veganism. But if people haven't even, if they don't know anything about the meat they're eating, and then they have this new product where they have fears because there's unknown elements of it, that will be then their chance to be educated about the things that are actually in the stuff they're already eating. And I think that's brilliant.
Also, what's more yucky than eating meat anyway? I just
for me, my final word on this, that the kind of slightly farcical nature of the story was epitomized by two sort of incidental bits that were reported on the same day. Governor DeSantis also signed Florida's Heartbeat Protection Act, which is a new, more restrictive 6-week abortion ban, which says quite a lot about fear and his politics and things like that. But also the fact that an earlier proposal to ban research involving cultivated meat was omitted from the final version of the bill because they wanted to make an exception for the space industry. So, and we've got this wonderful quote, "I think it's fine to develop moon meat. If you go to the moon and if you go to Mars, you should be allowed to get it there, but you sure as heck shouldn't be able to get it anywhere in this country, and sure as heck not here in Florida." I think that says everything we need to know about Governor DeSantis's sanity and stance on all things rational here. Moon meat coming soon to Florida.
Yum, yum.
So, to everybody listening, what do you think about this story about the cultured meat? Do you have opinions on this or anything at all that we've covered in this week's show? Please let us know. You can email us on enoughofthefalafel at gmail.com.
Thank you for listening, everybody, especially any listeners in America. We're all wonderful.
Nice try. You've lost them. They've all turned off by now, Kate.
I'm so sorry. It's not just this show. There are lots of other shows in our back catalogue, so have a look.
Indeed. And our next episode that is coming out is part of our vegan talk show series, and that is going to include myself and Kate and Julie. It comes out on Thursday, and the three of us are going to be discussing the book Regenesis by George Monbiot.
Anyway, that's enough of the falafel for this episode. I've been Julie.
I've been Anthony.
And I've been Kate, and you've been listening to episode 63 of Vegan Week. We're going to cover 10 stories or so pretty briefly before we begin looking at our own picks of the week and then our main story for the week.
Is there something scratching in your...
It's my dog. Betty, no. Sorry, I'm just a disaster today. Sit down. Good
You're
girl.
You're fine.
Good girl. Right.
As much as I am in favour of authenticity, I think perhaps do that segment again.
Okay.